People have always told stories. Tales of princesses, knights in shining armor, and everyday heroes. We in the Satanic Players Society tread a darker path. Join us as we bring you creatures of the night, the things lurking in the shadows, and the untold horrors of your mind. If you're brave enough, spend some time with our myths, legends, and monsters. Hi, and welcome to a much overdue episode of Myths, Legends, and Monsters. I've been absent for a while due to personal reasons, but I'm now back with a new episode. In this episode, I'll be telling you a story based on Greek mythology, namely Phaethon, son of Helios, the solar god. It's a story about pride, love, loss, and growth. It also gives us a glimpse into the constellations and the reasoning people had behind them back in those days. I like these old stories as they're telling of how people thought back then and how they reasoned about things. There is a story in the public domain that I've translated into English. It's based off of Mai Samselius' work. You can find links in the show notes. With that said, I hope you enjoy tonight's story. Helios, the solar god, had a son named Phaethon. Phaethon had never met his father, as he lived with his mother Clymene and his sisters. Clymene was the descendant of Oceanus, the god who controlled the mighty rivers. Clymene raised her children by the beach in her father's house. She would often tell her children of the father, the radiant solar god, who rode the flaming chariot over the celestial sphere. Phaethon listened attentively, and he could never hear enough about his father. He was immensely proud to be the son of the solar god. Phaethon's best friend and close relative was Cygnus. Cygnus loved music above anything else. It was said that Apollo himself, the god of music, had bestowed him with the gift of song. As the boys grew older, they were unable to see each other as much as before. Cygnus was older than Phaethon and was made king of Liguria. Cygnus came to visit when Phaethon was an older teen. This time, Phaethon wasn't as excited to see his childhood friend as he had been when he was younger. He'd often leave Cygnus to his own demise. Cygnus spent much of his time alone at the beach, singing songs in Apollo's honor. Cygnus stopped singing. He heard icebergs. He had never seen icebergs so far down south before. It was an omen. When bad things were to come, icebergs would appear. Phaethon came, riding his horse and chariot. He asked Cygnus if he would like to race him like they used to. Cygnus declined, saying he had to return home, for he had received an omen. Phaethon began arguing that Cygnus had become boring, and that a king should be able to do whatever he sees fit. "What point is there," asked Phaethon, "to be a king when you can't do as you please?" Cygnus answered that as a king, he had duties to fulfill. Phaethon grew agitated and said that Cygnus never had time for him. Cygnus had been the one to teach Phaethon how to deep dive and how to throw discus. Cygnus always made time to play with Phaethon, but this was before Cygnus was made king. Cygnus said that he didn't have time for violent, childish games and reminded Phaethon that he used to enjoy listening to his songs. In an effort to make amends, Cygnus asked Phaethon to join him on his journey to Liguria. There, Phaethon could find new friends, and they could enjoy music together. It would be a time of peace and reflection. Phaethon grew angry and said that he wasn't looking for peace. He wanted excitement. Cygnus warned Phaethon, telling him that he had become arrogant, but he just laughed it off. He left Cygnus to find his other, younger friends. Cygnus had meant to get angry with Phaethon, but his hubris had frightened him. He thought about the icebergs and what they represented. He wished he knew what they were trying to tell him. Cygnus left to go back to Liguria. Meanwhile, Phaethon had sought up his other friends, Epaphos and Amphion, who were about the same age as him. He persuaded them to do a race. The boys started bickering while making up the rules for the race, and Epaphos taunted Phaethon, asking him if he was sure that Helios was indeed his father. Phaethon had never considered the possibility that he might not be. He asked Epaphos how he could be so sure to be the son of Zeus. Epaphos replied that it had been confirmed by priests all the way down to Egypt. But did Phaethon have any proof of Helios being his father? Epaphos and Amphion continued with their remarks, calling Phaethon's mother a liar, saying that she was probably too embarrassed to tell him who his real father was, and that he was nothing more than a simple man. Phaethon and Epaphos got into an argument when Epaphos refused to take back what he had said. Phaethon told them that he would get proof that Helios was his father and that his mother wasn't a liar. Phaethon swore that he would ride his father's chariot over the celestial sphere, for if he was his son, then surely he would be able to do so. Epaphos and Amphion became silent. No one but Helios could ride a chariot, not even Zeus himself. Phaethon continued, saying that if he didn't do it, they would have every right to mock him, for it would mean that he wasn't his son, and that his mother was a liar. Phaethon ran back to his home, barely able to hold back the tears in his eyes. Upon entering his home, he called for his mother. Clymene saw the state he was in and asked him why he was upset. Phaethon was cold and direct when asking his mother who his father was. Clymene started laughing, thinking it was a joke. Such an absurd question. She had never made a secret of who the father of her children was. Phaethon's eyes looked coldly into hers and he repeated the question. Clymene sensed that there was more behind the question. She answered that it was Helios, the solar god, and that he already knew this. Phaethon looked down and mumbled that his friends had called him and his mother liars. He told his mother that they taunted him, saying he had no proof that he was the son of Helios. Clymene couldn't believe what she was hearing. Why would she be lying? Phaethon was the spitting image of Helios. Was her word not good enough? She asked him. Phaethon angrily replied that he had never been to see his father and wondered why that was. Clymene explained that Helios wore a golden crown made from the rays of the sun and that no child could withstand the exposure to the radiant light it admitted. Therefore, she had opted to raise him and his sisters in her father's house. She wrapped her arms around her son and assured him that Epaphos and Amphion were fools for calling him and herself liars, and that he was indeed the son of Helios. Phaethon told his mother that he had sworn that he would prove to his friends that his father was who he said he was. Clymene asked him what he had sworn to. He told her that he had sworn that he would ride the chariot just once, like his father does. Clymene was silent for a moment. What he had sworn to was impossible, for no one but Helios could steer the chariot. Everyone knew that, and Phaethon knew that better than anyone else. She told him that what he had sworn to, as foolish as it was, could not be undone. She would help him, and together they would travel to see his father. Phaethon and his mother traveled far, through the scorching hot deserts of Ethiopia and through the mighty Indian Empire, until late one night they arrived at a place from where they could see the grand palace of Helios. The palace stood on golden pillars and emitted a light so strong that they could find a road which led to the palace without difficulty. The gates of the palace were decorated with the most exquisite of jewels. The doors of the gates displayed the constellations, six on each door. Phaethon was in awe of the masterpiece in front of him when he noticed music pouring out from the closed gates of the palace. Clymene opened the gates, and Phaethon had to shield his eyes. The light emitting from the palace was too strong for his young eyes. Clymene told Phaethon that she would lead him. Phaethon gave her his hand, and they entered the palace. Clymene described the wonders that could be found in the palace. She told him of the goddesses of time. The goddess of the century looked like she barely moved at all, while the goddesses of the year, day, and hour were moving at a faster pace, each one moving faster than the last. Further down were four beautiful goddesses. One of them had flowers in her hair. That was the goddess of spring. The one next to her wore light clothes. This was the goddess of summer. Behind them stood someone who looked a bit disheveled, but her bright red hair and cold blue eyes made up for the clothes she was wearing. She was the goddess of autumn. Lastly, there was the goddess of winter, whose hair was made of snow and who left frost-covered footprints wherever she went. Phaethon envisioned and enjoyed the second-hand sight. He wished he could see it for himself, but he had come to see his father. Clymene told him they were getting closer to the golden throne at the back of the room. Helios had now seen his guests. He called out loudly for them to come closer. Clymene reminded him that the light shining from his golden crown was too bright for Phaethon. Helios removed the crown and asked Phaethon to open his eyes. Phaethon could now see his father for the first time. He could feel it, and he no longer doubted that Helios was his father. Helios embraced Phaethon for the first time. As happy as he was to see Clymene and his son, he wondered what had brought them to see him. Phaethon gathered up the courage to speak and said that he had something to ask of his father. If he was his son, would he be willing to prove it? Helios laughed heartily and answered that Phaethon could have anything his heart desired. This he swore to. Phaethon said that he wished to ride a chariot just one time to prove to everyone that he was his son. Helios didn't know what to say. Ride the chariot? He thought. That's impossible. Only he could ride a chariot, for that had been decided in the Olympus since the dawn of time itself. Not even Zeus would have the strength it took to steer the horses pulling the chariot. That is how it was, and always would be. Phaethon's destiny was that of a mortal human being. This had also been decided upon. He asked Phaethon to reconsider his wish, but Phaethon wouldn't give in. No, he said, that is all I ask of you, and if you truly are my father, then you will let me. You swore to it. The solar god led his son up the stairs and onto the roof of the palace. The never-ending night sky with its stars and constellations arched above them. Everything was silent. But in the distance, one could sense strange sounds. Delicate sounds, as if they were made of glass and something cold. Sometimes, one could hear a desolate, steady wailing, just like what one would imagine hearing in the underworld, the kingdom of the dead. It sounded threatening, like a low, menacing growl. Before Phaethon could ask where the sounds were coming from, Helios reached out with his hand and pointed. He described the road the solar chariot had to take and the horrors and monsters which were close by. Helios took Phaethon by the shoulders and looked his son in his eyes. Phaethon could see the frightened look that had taken a hold on his father. Helios told him of the first danger, the Taurus, the bull with the red eye who would lower his horns to try to impale him. Then there was the Leo, Hungrily he would lay in wait to devour both Python and the chariot. Shortly thereafter came the Scorpio. The Scorpio would attempt to sting Python, while the Cancer would reach with his enormous claws, pinching after Python. The Sagittarius was always ready, with his bow and arrow, never too far away. If Python went the wrong way and went too far north, he would melt the ice with the flames from the solar chariot. The ice held the dragon imprisoned, and if set free, would devour Python instantly. He begged his son for the last time to please change his mind. What Python asked for was not a gift, but a punishment. Python began to cry and threw his arms around his father. Helios held him in a tight embrace. "My son," he thought, "is in my arms crying, yet he won't change his mind. If only mortals weren't so foolish. If only there was a way to undo what was said." But alas, Helios had given his word. With sorrow in his heart, Helios led his son to the solar chariot, made from gold and silver, sprinkled with sparkling jewels. While Python was beaming with pride, admiring this exquisite work of art, Eos, the goddess of dawn, opened the gates toward the golden light from the east. Once the stars noticed that the gate was open, they faded away and disappeared from the sky together with the pale crescent moon. The solar god commanded that the horses were to be harnessed, and the goddesses led forth the unruly animals and had them bridled. He applied a holy unction on Python that would protect him against the heat from the flames. Lastly, he placed a crown made from the rays of the sun upon his head. Helios grabbed a hold of Python's shoulders and looked into his eyes. Helios instructed Python to be careful with the horses. Balance was of the utmost importance, and in order to maintain balance, he needed to control the horses. If he lost control and went too high, he'd scorch the celestial sphere and all the creatures and constellations. If he went too low, he'd scorch the earth and everything in it. The horses moved through a burning fire from within, and fire was expelled through their ears and nostrils as they moved forward. He warned him to not ever, ever use the whip. Python was eager to go. No amount of warnings would stop him. Helios, bound by oath, handed his son the reins. Triumphantly, Python stood on the chariot as the fiery horses spread their wings and leaped forward up the steep heavenly path. Helios watched as his son raised the arm with the golden whip. Helios shouted one last time to Python, "Whatever you do, do not use the whip." But Python, filled with hubris, didn't listen to his father. From his position up high in the sky, he saw the star-sprinkled heaven surrounding him. Down below, he saw the earth with its landscapes, deserts, oceans, mountains, and forests. That's when he remembered Epaphus. Epaphus's comments about his mother lying, about Helios not being his father, and how he had laughed at him. This was all playing in his mind. A darkness came over Python as he remembered this. He couldn't wait to get home and see the look on Epaphus's face, as he now had proof that he was the son of the solar god. His grip on the reins tightened, and he grew eager. The arm that he had raised with the golden whip now came down. Hard, it smacked the horses. The horses had never felt the sting and the throbbing pain from the whip before. The horses became skittish and galloped away from the celestial road that they were meant to take. They went towards the northern pole. Python, who didn't know how to control the horses, barely managed to stay on the chariot. The little bear, Ursa Minor, and the big bear, Ursa Major, felt the sudden heat from the chariot. they went plunging down, seeking the cool waters of the ocean. Boots, the guardian of the bears, grew confused when he discovered that he had lost control of the bears and soon dived after them. The fire from the chariot had now made the ice around the terrible dragon melt. The dragon suddenly felt that he was freed. Enraged, he whipped his thorny tail. The dragon roared and started to move towards Phaethon, who, pale and shaking, watched the beast approach. Phaethon cried out for his father. Why hadn't he listened to him? Why was it so important to him to show his friends that he could ride a chariot? If only he could steer the horses back to his father's palace. In despair, Phaethon looked to the east from where he'd come, but it was too late to go back. Paralyzed from fear, he had forgotten to loosen the grip on the reins and could therefore not hold the horses back. Terrified of the dragon, they rushed forward and threw themselves into all of the wonders and monsters of the celestial sphere. Suddenly, they found themselves at the place of the Scorpio. Dripping with green poison, his enormous claws and tail were outstretched over 200 constellations. Never had Phaethon seen anything so horrifying. Phaethon's screams echoed over the heavens as he covered his face with his hands, and in doing so, he let go of the reins. The horses suddenly felt that they were free and that no one was holding in the reins. They galloped into the unknown places and wonders of the celestial sphere. The horses bumped into Cassiopeia, who started to spin around in her swing faster than usual around the celestial pole. The seven sisters, the Pleiades, squeezed together when the flaming chariot went past. In vain, Perseus lifted his sword to stop them, but they simply rushed past. There was no stopping the horses, and the chariot was simply trailing behind with Phaethon in it. The goddess of the moon looked on as she saw how they galloped past her own chariot, and she noticed how the clouds had caught fire due to the extreme heat. The higher parts of the earth were scorched. The grass started to burn and transformed into a gray, ashy mass. Soon, the forests and mountains of the earth had caught fire. But worse yet was that the fire ravaged cities. It turned entire countries into ash and exterminated populations. Terrified, Phaethon looked on and saw how the earth was set ablaze, and could barely stand the sparks and the billowing smoke as he was holding on to the scorching hot chariot. The horses kept on running and spread fire and destruction far and wide. The earth began to crack due to the terrible heat. Entire areas transformed into deserts, and mountains began to crumble. In desperation, people and animals sought the cool waters of the ocean to cool down. But the oceans had already started to shrink, and the beaches were turned into deserts. Many of the animals of the sea had remained on dry land and could not make their own way back. Phaethon's sisters, who suspected he was to blame for all of this, tried to help the animals as best they could. They noticed some of the animals went into the mountain valleys and rested in its shadows. The sisters went after them to do the same. As they went into one of the deeper valleys, the earth beneath their feet opened up. From the large crack, they heard sounds that they had previously never heard before. It was a low moaning and sharp, skittering whispers. They looked down, and far below the earth's surface, they spotted Hades and Persephone, the king and queen of the underworld. The sound that they had heard came from the dead rising from their graves. It was a sign that the earth was about to perish. The sisters cried out for Gaia, the earth mother. Gaia heard their cries and lifted her head towards the heavens and called to Zeus through the roaring fire. Zeus, ruler of the sky, if you want us to die, then why don't you sling your lightning bolts towards us? Look upon our scorched earth. Behold, it's covered in soot and ashes. Is this what you want? Do you want all the animals and people to perish? The oceans. Why are you letting your brother Poseidon's kingdom shrink? Did he deserve it? 3 times already he has tried to raise his arms above the waters, but alas, the fire pushed him back. But if neither I or your brother can convince you, then think about your own reign. Look around you. Soon the sky and your heavenly palace will crumble and turn to dust. Then everything will return to chaos. Zeus, hear us. Extinguish the fires while there is still something left to save. Don't let all of creation succumb to the fire. Zeus listened and called all of the gods to consult them. Helios was also called, even though he had entrusted Python with the chariot. But Helios didn't come. Gaia went to the solar palace and pounded on the heavy gates. The gates opened. She asked Helios why he didn't show. Zeus demanded the presence of all the gods. Helios asked, "Does Zeus need me to tell him what ought to be done?" Gaia replied that Zeus listened to all of the gods. Helios had to have his say unless he wanted all of creation to be destroyed. Helios yelled, "Then, Zeus, do what needs to be done. Throw your mighty lightning bolt and save the world." By the time Helios had finished his sentence, Zeus had raised his arm and thrown out a lightning bolt. Python was struck right in the chest and thrown out of the chariot. He fell from the sky and landed in the river of Hades, Eridanus. As Python was killed by the bolt, the fires were simultaneously extinguished. Filled with sorrow over the fate of his son, Helios remained in his palace and covered his face. The sun did not rise that day. Clymene, Python's mother, realized that she was partly to blame for the death of her son. Desperately, she wandered in search of his body. When she couldn't do it anymore, she sent Python's sisters to continue the search. They finally arrived in the distant land where Python had plummeted down in the river. Night and day, the sisters searched for him along the beaches of the dark river. Cygnus, Python's friend, joined them. He asked to see his grave. The sisters started to cry and told him that they hadn't yet found his body. They knew that if they couldn't bury him, he would be doomed to forever wander the earth, and his soul would never find peace. The sisters told him that the body was in the river, but that the streams were too dangerous. It was as if the river was holding the body captive. Cygnus thought and made up his mind. Even if he were to be stuck at the bottom of the river, he had to try. Cygnus called out to Apollo, his protector. "Apollo, you once called me a swan. Help me now and let me become a swan so that I may dive down to the depths and retrieve Python." Apollo listened, and Cygnus was transformed into a swan. He dived into the river. The waters of the river rose. The streams turned violent and the waters grew dark. But after a moment, it became calm and still. Cygnus rose from the depths, carrying Python's body. He placed the body of his friend on the beach and sang a mourning song. As the sun began to set, the sisters carried Python to his grave and covered it with earth. The swan continued on singing his mourning song. When night came, the swan went silent. He bowed his head and spread out his wings over the grave, the final resting place of his friend. Python's sisters sat down by the beach and started to cry over their dead brother. Their tears fell down into the river and were transformed to little pebbles of amber. As the night turned to dawn, a radiant figure stood by their side. It was their father, Helios. Helios had not come to mourn with his daughters. He had covered his face in pain and been allowed to mourn for one day. He could mourn no longer. He told the sisters how the gods had been touched by the song of the swan and the faithful friendship he had shown to Phaethon. The gods had decided that the swan was to gain his rightful place among the stars. To the memory of Phaethon's death, the river Eridanus was also to become a constellation. The Eridanus constellation sparkled with a yellow glowing light, the light of the tears that the sisters had shed over their dead brother. Phaethon also gained his place among the stars. The star that shone the brightest was his star, the morning star. Each morning it were to be driven away by the first rays of the sun, only to reappear as the bright evening star. Thus, Phaethon will forever be reborn. Helios and the other gods had not forgotten about Phaethon's sisters. For their tears, they would also gain a place among the stars. Together, they were to be called the Heliots, the stars that bring rain, mild, gentle rain that would heal the wounds of the earth. High up on the celestial sphere, one could see the singing swan with his wings spread out. Down by the horizon, the Eridanus River curled, glimmering with amber. The morning star, Phaethon, shone brightly as the sisters gained their place among the stars as the Heliots. In that moment, clouds covered the sky and a mild rain fell down upon the scorched earth. When Helios had returned to his palace and rode his flaming chariot across the sky, life blossomed on earth and began anew. And that'll do it for this episode. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy it. I might try to work on some more of the Greek myths as I find them interesting, but we'll see what's to come in the next episode. Until then, I wish you sweet nightmares.